They came to the tomb, and his body was not there. Will you join me in prayer? Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. On the side of a cave in Ashland, Oregon, visitors can find three doors built into the side of the mountain. And behind each of those doors is a room. People will journey for thousands of miles here to stay for a week in complete and utter darkness. The rooms inside the cave are pitch black. For the entire time that people live inside of these caves, where they eat and shower and go to the bathroom, they have no light, not from candles or the sun or electricity. Every minute of every day is spent in complete darkness. Your eyes never adjust, one participant said. Inside, they lose their sense of time, their sense of place. I've watched videos of people describing their experience of being hollowed out by this darkness. But I'm especially taken by, I can't seem to stop watching the videos of these participants as they emerge back into daylight after days in this utter disorientation. They slowly peel off their blindfolds and they blink and stare. It's as if they've never seen this place before. This is so beautiful, one woman whispered. They can't stop staring. A journalist who went on one of these retreats recalls how when people emerge from absolute darkness, they spoke with gratitude and marveled at how detailed the world looked. Many of them sobbed like castaways, realizing their rescue was real. A group of women emerged from this kind of total and complete darkness on a Sunday morning 2,000 years ago. They have come to prepare the body of Jesus in a ritual of burial. But what makes their part in the story so unique, the reason their darkness is so complete, is that they have been there for everything that happened to Jesus since the time of his arrest. It's at that arrest that the disciples are split into two groups. The men disappear from the story, except for one sort of dishonorable appearance by Peter. But the other half, the women, remain. These women follow Jesus on the path to Gethsemane, wailing and beating their breast in anguish. It is the women disciples who linger near the cross with some of Jesus' acquaintances. It is there on the edge of these killing fields that they watch Jesus stagger and hang. They wait with him until he takes his last staggered breath. Then the women follow Jesus to the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea. And it is the women who see, they see his body laid inside. They see his broken body behind a stone that is rolled in front. The Apostles' Creed, which is one of the earliest testimonies of Christian belief, it noticeably lingers with the women here. Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, was buried. He descended into hell. And in the short summary of faith, four lines are dedicated to the suffering and death of Jesus. And we are to pack all of this up with us as we approach the empty tomb in the darkness with the women. But then, they find the stone is rolled away. Inside are two men. They are gleaming and glowing. The women disciples are shocked, afraid. Why do you look for the living among the dead? The glowing men ask. He is not here. He is risen. The male disciples are condescending and dismissive when the women announce the empty tomb. They chalk it up to mass hysteria or wish fulfillment or maybe some kind of hallucination from all the stress. But ironically, the men have set themselves up for the greatest possibility of alternative facts. They never saw Jesus on the cross. They never saw him die. It is the women, those who stayed closest to Jesus' suffering. It is them who see most clearly, who have been prepared to see the resurrection and to believe. Because Jesus' resurrection is for people who are close to despair. Jesus' resurrection is for these women who bore witness to the death of God's only Son. Resurrection is for those who have watched the terror of the world rip apart God's love, have watched it buried, have rolled the stone across their rotting hopes. It is for those who are in utter, indescribable darkness. The resurrection is for the hopeless. Maybe you are feeling hopeless. We are living in terrible times, and the darkness is great. And many of us have drawn near, like the women, to the horrors of our world, opening ourselves up to those who are killed in hospitals in Gaza, to those kidnapped off the streets by DHS, to those watching their lives destroyed by government repression. We are not alone in coming to the empty tomb with these women. The history of the church, it runs through these encounters in every generation, in every place in the world. In every generation, the empty tomb is waiting for the hopeless. It is waiting for you. And if we pay attention, we can see what it is like to live here in the light of resurrection. We can see what it's like to open ours, blinking into the sun and say, "This place is so beautiful." This week, I've been accompanied by one of those people in our church history, Oscar Romero. Romero became Archbishop of El Salvador during the country's civil war in the 80s. During this brutal decade, thousands, tens of thousands of ordinary people were disappeared, tortured, and murdered by military and paramilitary death squads. The country sunk into this astounding economic and social divide. Massive swaths of land were gobbled up by the ultra-rich. The parallels of our own situation of mocking the courts and kidnapping legal residents are growing daily. And at his first Easter as a bishop, Romero, the people's pastor, he gathered with thousands of campesinos, poor peasants, inside this massive, beautiful cathedral in San Salvador. Romero would preach only one more Easter sermon before he was gunned down during Lent, his third year as archbishop, by paramilitary forces. But on that Easter morning, Romero looked out at the crowd. "You are men and women of our time, feeling anguish and despair at so many problems and seeking paradise here on earth. But," Romero said, "do not look for it here. Look for it in the risen Christ." Romero didn't mean that the church ignores the political issues of the day, just the opposite. He preached, "The church is interested in these practical matters because Christ would not be redeemer if he had not been concerned about feeding the multitudes who were hungry, if he had not restored the sight of the blind, if he not felt anguish for the crowds that overfilled his land. But God's redemption is so full that it spills out of this cup. The crucified and risen Jesus comes for liberation from change, but also to free us from sin and death. And when we have overcome death, we are freed for the surprise of God's work in the world. Because with all hope gone, we can see that the world is no longer the same." Robert Jensen is a theologian who says it this way: that Jesus lives means that his love, perfected in the cross, is now active to surprise us. Romero, in his Easter sermon, he talks about this surprise. He is surprised by how students and campesinos and housewives have stepped up to fill the gaps in ministry in parishes where the priests were disappeared. He was surprised by the number of people who continue to speak out against the government despite knowing the consequences, thousands of people who refuse to be silent. He was surprised by the Madres de la Plaza who hounded the government, demanding information about their missing children. Like the women, each of these people came blinking into the sun, an old world now utterly different, alive with possibility. The resurrection is first announced to women who are carrying the utter despair of what they have witnessed. They have seen the total powerlessness of God on the cross. Herbert McCabe reminds us what they discover. It's not a Jesus who rises to take vengeance on his enemies, but an empty tomb and an absent Christ. In Luke's gospel, there is no Jesus in the tomb. They have to keep looking for him. McCabe reminds us of this. This, the gospel is saying, is the beginning of faith, of real faith, to recognize the emptiness, the absence of the power of Christ in the world. The women come to the tomb with one life and they leave with another. The same world, the same cruelties, the same state program of terror, but now powerless before God. What might that mean for us? Those of us facing the uncertainty of our country, who see growing repression and violence, here's what McCabe has to say for us. It is only if we have seen the injustice of our world, shared in the horrors of a godless world. It is only if we can feel with and understand people who want to say, "How can there be a God if I am treated this way? Where is the power of God who's supposed to be good and loving? Where is he to rescue me from concentration camps and military barracks, from the death squads?" It is only if we understand all of this, that we recognize Jesus' presence. It is only when we have said, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" that we are ready for resurrection. Beloved, if you are feeling hopeless and afraid, the resurrection is for you. If you are feeling empty and alone, the resurrection is for you. If you are feeling that all is lost, you are ready for the resurrection. Jesus is risen. Death is defeated. No darkness is too deep as we live in the light of this day. Amen.